Mr. Boxall, Reel 2. We were talking about your voyage out on the troop ship Dorsetshire, so out to India.
Yeah. Well, when we got to Portshead, once again, it was a walk, a march round, but you didn't dock at Portshead. What you did was you tied up in the roads, and then they put a floating gangplank out to you, and it was a bit of an air-raising effort to walk across that. And we had a march in Portshead. The one thing I can remember, and it always did strike me, was that the Egyptian police treating little kids who were begging, hitting them with canes, and they weren't just tapping them, they were really whipping them. And I always thought, I always did find that the natives treated their owner blooming sight worse than we ever did. But it was just one of those things that, you know, that sticks in your mind.
The rest of the trip,
it was warm, it was hot, but eventually after 3 weeks we got to Bombay, disembarked, and
what
then
were
we...
your first impressions, you know, as you approached Bombay and
well, it's just another place where you're going to get off, really. We got off, went along to the sort of shuffled along or marched along to the station and onto the train to go up to Delhi, which was a 2 day and night journey on a train.
What was that like? Because Indian trains are slightly different from...
we had troop trains, and they were, the carriage was, had wooden seats and a wooden back to the seat, which came up and made a bunk. So you had room for six to sleep in there, and you had your sleeping stuff, and you slept on the train. And it was a proper troop train, so that was, we had army cooks on it who, you know, they sounded cookhouse, and they went along, two people went from the carriage along and got your food and brought it back to the carriage. Then the orderly officer used to come round to inspect the carriage to see if you cleaned it up.
Take an interest in the countryside? Or?
Oh, yes, yeah, you know, well, I mean, it was all new to us, wasn't it? I mean, you watched and saw the wogs going out with their little chappies in the mornings, out on my dam, and it was, it was interesting, you know, it was a two days and nights on the train, and that, again, was an experience. I mean, we got used to it in the end, because the longest one I ever did was 7 days and nights on the train.
Welcome. And where did you get to?
To Delhi, Nicholson Line, Delhi, with the 1st Battalion.
That's where you joined the battalion?
Yeah, that's where I joined the 1st Battalion.
And what were your first, your first impressions on joining the 1st Battalion?
Well, we got off, the regimental bus came and collected us, and we got off the regimental bus, and I can remember the first words that the bandmaster spoke, and that was, of course you'll have a new suit of blues, won't you? And they were 30 rupees it cost us, and our pay was 7 shillings a week, so you can tell... You weren't very pleased about having to buy a new suit of blooming blues, but and then we boys were there, so we were in with all the boys.
What was your accommodation like?
It was a barrack room, yeah, but it was a clean barrack room, nice concrete floor, open barrack room, punkers to keep the air going.
Can you explain what a punker is?
It's a like a big blanket that waves to and fro. They used to be done pulled by an Indian sitting there pulling a rope, but when I was there, it was done by the electricity. And that kept sort of air going.
And what were the beds like?
The beds were iron, metal, not sprung. With biscuits, but we had what we called a durry, which was a woven blue sort of rug, and that used to lay on the bed, and then the biscuits were laid up, and then your boots had to be laid at the foot of the bed, and then your topi, your band topi, the white one, was had to be laid, and then they were had to all be lined up, so all the spikes lined up, and oh yes, it was you didn't do things by halves by any means.
And was there a bug problem?
No, we didn't have it. Yeah, it was clean. Yeah, it was clean.
Now, what about your sort of training as a you were training as a band
Oh yeah, yeah. I started to learn to play the clarinet. And
had you any musical skills before at all?
Not very much, no.
What could you play before?
I played a guitar and a banjo for quite a while.
Could you read music though?
Not very well, but I did learn to read music.
Now, how did they train you? What was the army's way of training you to play clarinet, read music, the rest of it?
The bandmaster used to stand behind you with his little baton, but he used to use the knob end of it and beat time on your head if you didn't. You should have learned how to. What they did was they got you so that you could read the music, basically, and then they got you into the band. So you played in the band and you were with an experienced bandsman who sort of shepherded you along and helped you along, and sort of when we went on route marches, they made sure that you knew what you were blowing. And because it's not easy to march, play an instrument, and keep your dressing and keep in step and everything. Well, I mean, keeping in step is dead easy, but it's not a simple thing. It looks easy, but it isn't. And it takes quite a bit of practice. In fact, some people never did master it.
And how skillful did you have to be at the clarinet to sort of be able to get into the band? Or was it?
Well, you had to be able to play it. I mean, you had to be able to play, and you had to be able to read the music enough to. But then, as you played in the band, you gradually learnt to read it a little bit better.
So you'd start with personal instruments, yep. And then you'd move on.
Yeah,
and
move
and
part of the band.
Trained on the job.
And on boy service, although we weren't expected to, well, we were expected when the band went on a route march. If it was 20-odd miles, you were expected to march with them.
Would they have rehearsals? I mean,
oh, yes. Well,
what would a typical rehearsal be like with the band?
We practiced all. We'd have a morning practice, and then afternoon was a recreation afternoon, and then perhaps there'd be an evening practice.
What would happen in a typical practice? What would you
really say? Well, the bandmaster and band sergeant would get out some scores of music, and you'd play different operettas and things like that, and different marches. And if you were going on a route march, you'd practice the marches you were going to play. Because what they used to do, they used to have the band, the core drums and the band, and the core drums would play a march and the band would play a march. And then at the last stop, before we got into barracks, the band and drums would get together, and we'd head the battalion marching in. When we got to the barrack gate, we'd march past it, counter march, halt, and then play all the battalion into Rule Britannia. We played the regimental march, all the battalion at the march into barracks, and then you played yourself in.
Was it quite inspirational playing on a route march?
Oh yes, yeah, it was. It was all right. And,
the men say it really picked them up.
Oh yeah, and although of course the route marches then were done in threes, in three ranks, and you marched in threes. Where now you straggle along. Best way you can, from what I can see of it.
And what other duties would you have? I mean, would you have to learn the bugle to do bugle?
No. The drums, buglers, in the drums, they would learn to play the bugle and the fife.
So they did all the camp calls?
Yeah. You were governed by bugle calls. There was bugle call for nearly everything. There were some funny old ditties went with them as well, I tell you.
What do you mean? The words come to Courtney's door, sort of thing.
Yeah. There was one, the Courtney's dress was, "You got a face like a chicken's arse." And there was, there were little ditties that went. In fact, my daughters have said to me, "You ought to record all these days because nobody knows them now."
Cool. Do you want to do a couple
of them? No, not really. they were all, sergeant's wives had puddings and pies, or officers' wives had puddings and pies, sergeant's wives had skivvy. That was a mess call. And
any others?
Oh,
don't worry, you won't.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I'd have to think of some of them. The alarm call was put your backs against the wall. And that was, if you know, and fire call, and oh, there was call for nearly every blooming thing.
Now, part of you mentioned before, part of you, the band's other job was being stretcher bearers.
Stretcher bearers,
did
yeah.
Did you get training in that as well?
Well, we didn't. The boys didn't, because that was 39 when I went out. By the time it was 40 when we got 1940 when we got to Bangalore. Back in of 39.
So when you were, you did that was left until you were a man service.
Well, yes, we got to Nicholson Lines in Delhi and joined the band, but then it wasn't very long afterwards that we had an overnight journey up to Dehradun to go up into the hills for the hot season. All the boys went up into the hills for the hot season, and we went to a place called Chakrata.
Chakrata,
Chakrata. And that was 9,200 feet above sea level.
And that's in the Dehradun area?
That was it, above Dehradun. It was in the foothills of the Himalayas.
And what was it like there?
Well, when you came out your barrack block, you either went uphill or downhill. You didn't walk along on the level very much. The only level bit was a hockey pitch laid between Chakrata and Kalana, which was at the other hill station.
Was the climate better up there?
Yes. Yeah, well, it was cooler. It was hot down on the plains, but it was cooler, and all the companies had a period up there, a fortnight or 3 weeks up in the hills.
And what would you be doing up there?
Same thing, band practice, PT. One day they did say we would have a day's holiday on a Thursday. We'd go down to the waterfall. What they didn't say was the waterfall was 4,000 feet down the Cudside. And that wasn't too bad going down, but coming back up wasn't very much of a pleasure at all. But
how did you get on with the Indians? I mean, firstly,
didn't have much to do at all to do with them. We certainly didn't mix with them. We did play one or two Indian schools at hockey, the boys, but we didn't mix with the Indians very much.
And what about the Anglo-Indians?
We had one or two in the battalion, but not many.
And what about did you have, I mean, I know you were only boys, but did you have Indian servants attached to your...
No, we had Indian servants who you could get paid to clean your kit and things like that. And
even as boys?
Yeah.
And what would they do? What would they do?
Well, they'd clean your boots and your... We didn't have gaiters. We had short putties, so they didn't have that. We had our belts were blancoed, but most of it was white blanco because all the stuff for the band were all white. I mean, the topees were white.
And the Indian servants would do that for
you? They would do that for you, but you had to pay them, yeah.
Any other servants? I mean, did you have any others? Adobe Wallers? Or
well, yes. There were people called Cader Bucks, and I think it was K-A-D-E-R B-U-X, and they were, their family had serviced the Royal Norfolk Regiment for tailors and everything for years and years. And they even came to Hong Kong when we were there, by the way, to us. So they must have made a good thing out of it.
And they
ran the canteen, and they ran all the things, like the people who looked after the toilets and beasties and everything like that. So.
But you didn't mix with them.
You didn't mix with them.
What about, you know, you said there'd be every afternoon there'd be a recreation time. Just sleeping, or would, you know...
In the hot season it was sleeping, but, when we're up in the hills, we'd go and play hockey or play football, probably play another regiment's boys' team at hockey or football, or...
I mean, hockey's the big game, you don't hear much about hockey in England until...
Out there.
Did you take to it?
I wouldn't say I took to it, but I played for the army in Hong Kong and combined services in Hong Kong. I played for my regiment. I played for British troops Berlin. I played for 2 Div. Played for Aldershot services when I was there, down at Aldershot. I would say I took to it. In fact, when I came out of the army, when I was 40, my wife said, you can put that hockey stick away, you're finished now.
What was it you liked about it? I mean, hockey. I mean, you'd not played it in England,
I hadn't played it in England. It was just skillful in using a stick and, you know, I mean, not everybody could hit a ball, let alone stop one when it came along. I stopped it with my eyes and my head and legs on occasion, but it was just the fact that it was a skillful game.
What other sport did you play?
Played hockey, and I did cross-country running a bit, but it was mainly hockey was my game. And cricket, I played cricket as well, but...
And that would be in the afternoon breaks?
Yeah,
in
yeah.
the hill country?
Yeah.
What would you do?
When we were in Bangalore, and that, of course, we didn't have afternoon breaks because the climate was fairly coolish. And we sort of carried on doing band practice and things like that.
And anything else, you know, about your time? You know, I'm thinking about the first period as you're settling in. Yeah, Nicholson Lines first, and then you move.
And then
to
up
Chakrata.
To Deerdoon. And then up to Chakrata. Came down from Chakrata, and we hadn't been down very long. We did our initial weapon training and fired our first rifle course there at Delhi. But then the whole battalion moved to Bangalore.
Now, what do you remember about the first rifle course?
Winky Fitt was my instructor. And Winky Fitt was a real old Swede at the best of times. There were very few actual Norfolk people in the battalion. Very few, and he was one who was a Norfolk, and he wasn't. He was quite adept at putting his topi down so you could rest your rifle on it, although you weren't supposed to, but to help your firing and that.
I mean, it's first. We interviewed Winky Fitt before he died. What was he like as an instructor? I mean, he was quite young himself then.
Yes, he was. He was Lance Corporal bus driver when I went there.
What was he like as your rifleman?
He was a. He was a typical Norfolk bloke, wasn't he? Sick as 10-inch plank. But he was all right, you know. He'd help you out if he could.
Did he know? I mean, he was supposed to have been a decent shot himself by the end.
I think he was all right. Yeah, he was quite a good shot, and he was quite a good instructor.
So he got it through to you.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
How did you take to rifle shooting, you know?
I always found that the thing was to get the bullet out the end of the gun, and that was it. I wasn't a brilliant shot. I could shoot all right, but I wasn't a brilliant shot. And I found that in all my service that the times that you actually need to be able to hit the bullet 600 yards is a few and far between. The best thing is to wait until they get quite close for you, fire at them to make sure you hit them.
That was, yeah. And what about the first?
Well, that's not so bad. The automatic self-loading rifles were worse than the old Lee Enfield, and that was a good rifle.
And what other weapons training did you get as a boy, or was that it?
Well, that was it. We did do later on. Did go on to the automatic. It wasn't a Bren gun. It was a BSA gun. The Bren gun hadn't reached there then because, as an aside, we went out on an exercise from Bangalore and we had transport, motor transport for the first time because our transport was mules and mule carts. The transport was 1908 Rolls Royces converted into trucks with solid tyres, so you can tell what it was like. And I mean, wirelesses, we didn't have wirelesses, we had heliographs and semaphore flags as signals. We were still living in the dark ages, very nearly.
Now, I'm not quite sure. So you were at Nicholson Lines,
Delhi.
And then you went to Deerdoon.
Deerdoon is a staging post to go up to Chakrata.
So it was just en route?
Yeah, en route. But Deerdoon was where the train stopped. Once you got to Dehradun, you got into buses and went up.
And from Jakarta?
Jakarta.
Did you go back to Delhi, or did you go to Bangalore?
Went back to Delhi. And then from Delhi, we were in Delhi for about 2 or 3 months. And then we went down to Bangalore, trained to Bangalore, which was 6 days.
When did you go to Bangalore? What month?
That one, I think, would have been about October.
So after the war had broken out?
Yeah.
Before we go on to that then, what impact did the declaration of war have on you?
Little, very little. We'd been playing hockey on the Sunday and came off the hockey pitch, and the RRQMS came out of the audio room and said war was declared this morning at 11 o'clock. But that was as far as it went. I mean, it had no immediate effect. I mean, there was nothing like blackouts or anything like that. It was all quite...
Just carried on?
Yeah, just carried on. It was just as if, you know, all right, well, that was all right for them at home, but we're, sod you, Jack, I'm all right.
And so that was September, and in October you moved to Bangalore. Where in Bangalore?
Baird Barracks. Baird Barracks, yeah, Baird, B-A-I-R-D, Baird Barracks.
And what were those barracks like?
They were very much the same as Nicholson Lines. They were a bit older, I think. But the train journey down was good, because that was 6 days on the train, 6 days and nights.
What do you remember of that?
Well, the thing was that when we stopped at a station, you weren't allowed to get off the train until the CO bugler had sounded the fall out, and then he sounded the fall in, and you had to get back in the garages. And then the train wasn't allowed to move until he sounded the advance. And if you saw it now on TV, you'd think we were all bloody balmy. But that was how it was done. It was done as a military operation. I mean, you know, you once again, you work by the bugle.
It's a long time, 6 days in a...
Yeah, well, you get used to it. As I say, you know, it was... there was always something to see out the carriage, and there was always something to do. There was always the officer coming round, or time for meals. Someone had to go along to the cook shack and get the meals. And so, you know, it was... we were all doing it, so it was very much, you know, we're all in it together. Let's get on with it.
And you got to Bangalore in October.
Yeah.
You're still a boy.
I came on service at 17 and a half. It was originally 18, but it was 17 and a half. So I was 17 in the November. It'll be the following May 40, when I came on man service.
So your training just... Any difference in your training before that you became a man?
Just the same band practice and route marches and...
Did you prefer Bangalore or...?
Yes, it was all right. Bangalore was all right. I mean, we were able to go out and go to the pictures and things like that.
British films?
We saw all the films... before they got to England. I mean, Gone with the Wind and things like that, we saw in India, and they were sort of at previewing it when I got home in 1940.
And what were the cinemas like? Were they sort of open-air cinemas, or were they...
Yes, a bit. They were, you know, you just sat on chairs, and they had... Some of the higher-class Indians went there.
And what other recreations did you have, you know?
One of the things we had to do was go to church. Now, the boys had to form the choir for the church in the evenings, and in the mornings we had to, but the band used to play at church service in the morning, so all the kit had to be carried there. We had to carry the blooming stands and the timpanies, and I don't know what they are, and carry them back home again. And then you had to be in the choir. And then in the evening, we had to be in the choir for the evensong. So we got a fair amount of religious education.
Were you religious by nature?
Not too much. I did, you know, we did, when we were children, we did have to go to church, and our mother. made sure we went to church or went to Sunday school and things like that.
And how else would you spend your time at Bangalore?
Playing games, playing hockey or, well, hockey mostly, or cricket we played. We didn't play football there very much.
How did you get on with the NCOs generally? You know, I mean, what did you think of them? And how did they treat you?
Well, they treated us all right. I mean, you didn't have anything much to do with duty NCOs. It was just the NCOs in the band. I mean, you had a corporal or a lance corporal in charge of the boys in the band, and he looked after you. There was a band corporal and a band sergeant, and they sort of ran the band, but they were the people that, the NCOs that you knew, and the bandmaster, of course. Clean the bandmaster's windows in his quarter more often than cleaning the windows in our bar room, I'll tell you.
The bandmaster, was that an NCO rank or an officer?
No, he was a WO1, Warrant Officer Class 1 rank. It was Howard, Monty Howard.
That was his name, was
that
it?
That was, yeah, Howard.
What was he
bandmaster
like?
Howard. He was rather plumpish. He could be a bit tetchy if things didn't go right. I mean, he quite had a habit of standing and beating time on the back of the head with his blooming baton. But he was all right. He eventually became a major quartermaster.
Did he have an officer that was in charge of you as well?
Yes, well, headquarters, no, not really. We had a company commander. We were in headquarters company.
Who would that be?
I think that was Gertie Freeman. Captain Freeman.
What was he like?
He was all right. He eventually became, oh, not Freeman, Freeland.
Freeland?
Land, yeah. He eventually became GOC Northern Ireland. So you can see he was a fairly...
What was he like then, you know, as a
presumably? You didn't see much of them. I mean, officers... certainly on boy service, I mean, you kept well clear of officers as much as you possibly could. We didn't have much to do with them. I mean, it was the same with the RSM. I mean, the RSM was someone near to God. I mean, you didn't get anywhere near him if you could help it.
Anything else happened before you sort of moved on to, you know, full soldier, you know, in a man?
So. No, we kept going, but of course in May, the battalion were warned to come home.
Just about the same time as
yeah,
you?
Yeah, about the time I came on man service.
What difference did it make when you went on to man service?
You got 14 shillings a day, 14 shillings a week instead of 7 shillings a week, and you had money to burn.
And were you still in the band, or would you go on to...
Well, no, by then, the battalion was packing up to come home, and we were staying behind on rear details, so we were doing things like guard duties and anything else that was going, because we came home in the October and brought home the families and all the heavy baggage.
So, between May, the battalion went to May,
yeah,
so
May,
another 5 months.
Yeah, we stayed behind on rear details and sort of handed over the barracks to the local TA or whatever they were. And also carried out guard duties and anything else that was going.
Wasn't that a quiet period?
That was quiet, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was, I mean, there was no band practice or anything like that. All the band stuff had gone.
So what exactly would you spend all day doing, you know?
Well, there was a guard. We had two gates that had to be guarded, so you'd probably be on guard duty every other day or something.
You were the only people in Baird Barracks, then, were you?
Yeah.
And so the next thing would be that you came home in October? Or?
I think we came home in... whether we came home in August. We got home in November.
August.
Yeah.